Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Hello and welcome to another festive edition of the James Bond A to Z podcast. My name is Tom Butler, and on the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me Tom Wheatley in a pear tree.
That's quite pretty good for you.
And on the second day of Christmas, my true love gave to me a leaping Brendan Duffy.
Wow.
Lovely. And Tom Wheatley in the pear tree.
Oh yeah, you've got to do the countdown.
Welcome back, gentlemen. Another festive edition of the podcast. I think this is, can you believe it's our fourth Christmas podcast that we've done?
Well, when I was looking through the roster for what we're going to talk about today, I got a bit confused about the years and some of the stuff from last year I thought was this year, so it's all melding into one at the moment.
I mean, it's been a long wait since... I mean, I think our first Christmas episode was talking about No Time to Die.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then we did Glass Onion, or was
Glass
that,
Onion.
Was that the following year?
Glass Onion 2022, yeah.
Yeah.
And then last year...
And then last year, yeah, we talked all sorts of bits and bobs, didn't we? But I'm glad we've made this an annual tradition. It gives us an opportunity to get back together and, talk Bond. So on this episode, this special, maybe we could call it a podcast.
No, that's
you can if you want, but not.
We're going to talk about our highlights, cultural highlights of the year, so films and TV shows that we've enjoyed. We're going to look back at the year in Bond. We're also going to talk about Bond 26 again. Which might feel like a bit of a broken record at this stage. But yeah, we've got lots of things to look forward to on this episode. Last year we talked about our favourite Christmas movies.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have favourite Christmas songs that you like to tune into at this time of year?
Yeah.
Go on, tell me one of them.
Well, as your mother will know, I'm a big fan of George Michael.
Yeah.
So the first song I listen to on November the 20th is always Last Christmas.
Very good.
Mm.
On when?
November 20th.
November the 20th.
I find that nowadays it's quite hard to avoid Christmas, especially when it comes to music on the radio and the TV and stuff. So if you try and hold it back to the 1st of December, you've already heard everything anyway. So I got to get it in. You don't want to ruin Christmas by listening to a lot of rubbish before you finally get to the thing you like.
Yeah, that's interesting. So 20th of November is your Christmas cutoff.
It's my Christmas start for listening to Christmas music actively.
Right, okay. And you always start with Last Christmas?
Always start. First, as soon as I get up on the 25th of November, Last Christmas.
Have you heard of Whamageddon?
Yes, yeah.
Can you explain it?
So Whamageddon is to try and go the whole festive period without hearing Last Christmas.
Yeah.
So Wham. Usually it's ruined by the supermarkets.
I think that's where most people
lose.
Or if you're in hospital and it's been piped in.
What about you, Brendan? What's your favourite Christmas song?
So I do have a hard line December the 1st. I don't want to be hearing anything until December the 1st.
Yeah.
Any Christmas songs, not interested. But I quite like Shakin' Stevens.
Mm. Yeah, if there was one Christmas song that I'd imagine you'd pick, it would be Shakin' Stevens.
But on the whole, I get fatigued quite quickly by it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. That Bublé Christmas album, I mean, that's...
I purely class Bublé as Starbucks music. Like, that's the only time I'll hear it. I will never actively put any of that music on.
Yeah, I've got a very strict Christmas playlist, which we're not allowed to deviate from at home, because it's just... Yeah, some Christmas songs, it's just not worth having to listen to.
Yeah.
My favourite, though, is... it's called Christmas Baby Please Come Home by Darlene Love. You know it? It's like a Motown song.
No.
It is the best Christmas song. I have listened to it and tell me it's not the best Christmas song.
I think Bublé's covered it.
Bublé's covered it, yeah.
Okay. He's done the lot.
I don't like that version. Great, okay, well that's Christmas songs covered. Let's have a chat about our cultural highlights of the year. Yeah, why don't we start by talking about the TV we've enjoyed. And Wheatley, why don't you tell... here's a challenge for you. Talk about it before telling us the title and see if we can figure out what it is that you're talking about.
All right, mine's going to be pretty easy because I don't actually watch a lot of TV and I'm normally at least 15 years behind everyone else when it comes to TV. One show that I really liked this year was set in a futuristic apocalypse.
Go on.
And is based on a computer game.
Oh, Fallout.
Fallout, yeah. I thought that was a very good show, an unexpectedly good show.
That's on Prime.
That's on Prime, yeah. And because I'm a big gamer, I play the Fallout games for a while. Don't normally like shows based on games, like Last of Us and stuff like that. Was fine, wasn't that impressive. But Fallout, very impressive. It was very good. And they've got a new season coming out pretty soon, I think. So,
what is it about Fallout that you liked?
They do a very... The game is very much a combination of apocalyptic future with zombies and stuff like that, but it's quite humorous and they do the humor very well in it. It's quite fun. It's got the comedy in it, but it's also quite an in-depth sci-fi series as well.
It's if I remember the game rightly, it's post-apocalyptic. You're in a bunker and you sort of come out into the world.
Yeah.
And
so it's basically set in the nuclear war happens during the 40s or 50s.
Right, okay.
So when they come out, they're in the future and they've got all the futuristic technology, but they're basically still in the 40s and 50s. Right. So everything is very 40s and 50s orientated.
Right.
Which is a nice angle. And there's all sorts of zombies, there's robots, there's like, I don't think there's aliens. There might be aliens, can't remember. But it's very, there's a lot going on. It's very clever and they've done it well. They've done it like, it'll run for a long time because they've done the characters and everything well. A bit of a sort of a Losties thing where there's like lots of open-ended things going on.
Did you watch that?
I did, but I tailed off, I'm afraid. I got quite bored by it.
Mm. And it's Ella Purnell she's the lead, right?
Yeah.
From Yellow Jackets.
Yes, that's right, yes. Yeah.
Right.
And that's a good heavy use of
Goggins
spots.
Goggins is fantastic, isn't it?
And he plays the guy with no nose, doesn't he? Sort of,
yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Mm. I need to check that one out. What about you, Brendan?
Okay, so... I've got two that jump out for me.
Yeah.
One is a really interesting take on Greek mythology with a fantastic all-round ensemble cast.
Cancelled now.
And exactly. Chaos. That's my problem.
I was going to put Chaos in. I like Chaos. I thought it was really, really smart, but I don't think the Netflix audience quite understood it. Well,
Netflix didn't understand it because they sacked it off.
Yes.
And it was all set to be a 3-season arc. That was the point. Interesting. It was created for that. And it's just been left now. And I do think this will be one that gets picked up. It's been left with so many people wanting it to continue. Mm. Netflix, I feel like they've made a mistake on that one.
Netflix cancelled a lot of shows this year, though. There's economics behind it. And I think it's just sort of symptomatic of the streaming era, right? They've got TV shows aren't allowed the opportunity to flourish like they once were and get to a point where they've got an established audience. It's all about the metrics.
It's not a long play, is it? They've got if it's not a big hit instantly, then it's questioned whether to continue with it.
But it was constantly top of the top 10 on Netflix.
Yeah, but I never
weeks.
Yeah,
but that's just to get you to watch it, right?
But I do think it was there was a lot more you could have done with that series.
What's it about? Give us a summary of what that show's about.
So it basically goes through the stories that we know of and the characters that we know from Greek mythology, but with a different spin on it. And the idea is that there's a prophecy that chaos will rain down and Zeus will meet his end.
It basically follows the same concepts as original Greek mythology in a modern setting. But it does it very well because it doesn't just take the names and everything and turn it into, you know, loosely based on stuff. It actually follows the myths and everything very closely. So if you understand Greek mythology and you know it, it's quite clever.
Right.
But it's an amazing cast, isn't it? Really, really good.
Jeff Goldblum's in it. He's the one.
He's really good
in it.
Yeah.
He's Zeus. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. And that was on. That's on Netflix.
That's on Netflix. Yeah. Unless they've taken it down for some weird.
They're still on Netflix.
Yeah. Let's hope they keep it up there. And let's hope somebody does snap it up.
Mm-hmm. Did you have something else you wanted?
Yeah. And the other one that jumped out more recently, Rivals.
Okay.
On Disney Plus. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's unashamedly knows what it is. It knows what it's trying to do. It's there's a lot
tell
of,
it, what
lot
is
of
it about
in
what
it.
Is it about
it's about well there's a lot of sex
right
romping
romping
but it's about the TV industry really along with an MP who he's got a rivalry. They all live in this village,
and it's set in the 80s. Set right? in the That's 80s. A very specific point of like,
yeah. You have and to it be able, feels yeah. very 80s. The soundtrack is fantastic.
I'm surprised you're not all over this.
Yeah,
I'll get into it in 15 years.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's not been cancelled. That's going to get a second season.
It's been massive on Disney.
Absolutely huge, and I think David Tennant's brilliant in it.
Danny Dyer, apparently.
Danny Dyer,
I haven't seen it because he's good in it. Yeah.
I really recommend. It's one of those shows as well. It's not a slow burn. It's bang, you're in.
Interesting. Yeah, I think we'll watch it over Christmas. I reckon.
Yeah.
Any other recommendations from you before I go into mine?
Notable mentions: the end of Curb Enthusiasm.
Yes,
which was a very, very nice ending. I mean, there was always a risk with those things, obviously, after the Seinfeld wrecked their last season.
Yeah.
But I think it was fantastic end to the whole thing. Really, really pulled everything together. Clever ending.
I think it was a perfect way to rectify that failure.
It was a very smart way to do it. And, I mean, most seasons of shows, you could probably say, you know, three or four seasons probably should have stopped there. I think Curb Enthusiasm is one of the few shows where you go, 11 seasons or whatever it is right. Yeah, it did the job.
Yeah.
Probably shouldn't go any further, which is a smart move.
Yeah.
And then the other one I've got is a bit of a... I've got two, actually. Two probably not obvious ones, but because I'm a dork who watches cartoons. X-Men 97 on Disney+.
Oh, I hear that's good, yeah.
Very good. And then Batman Caped Crusader, which is an animation which is sort of follows the original Batman animated series. Remember that?
Yeah, and that's Prime Video.
Yeah. It's surprisingly good. Actually, good storytelling.
Is Mark Hamill in the new one?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think it's even got the Joker in it this season.
I want to recommend a couple of unscripted shows, which just off the top, that started from the start of the
year. Whose line is it anyway?
The Traitors Series 2, which I think delivered some of the best drama on TV this year.
Absolutely fantastic.
That ending was so great. Yeah. Gladiators.
Oh,
the new BBC version of Gladiators, which began literally in the first week of the year.
Yeah.
I just thought it was fantastic family entertainment. But if we're talking scripted shows, one show from Australia, which was in its second season, a comedy about a man and a woman who met over a lost dog, Colin from Accounts.
I've heard of
it. Have you seen this?
No.
It is hilarious. It is the best comedy.
Australian.
Mm. It is the funniest comedy I've seen in a long time.
Mm.
It's so well observed. Both the two people at the heart of it, apparently they're a real life couple and the chemistry is really there and you can sort of sense that. Sometimes it gets a bit like far-fetched and you sort of can't really believe, but the comedy is so good that it's you sort of forgive it because it gets kind of quite daft quite quickly.
Yeah.
But it's very, very good. It's all on BBC iPlayer if you're in the UK. I recommend that. Another BBC show I want to recommend is it's a detective series.
Ludwig.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I've got that down on my list as one I really want to watch and people keep telling me it's good, but I've not watched it yet.
How have you not watched it?
I've been busy.
Oh.
It's excellent.
It is excellent.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not really one for crime detective dramas, but there's something about Ludwig that's very charming. And that's obviously a lot of it's David Mitchell, but also it'll come to me in a second. But what I really like about Ludwig is how incredibly slick and well made it is for a BBC drama. It looks incredible. The score is incredible.
The thing about Ludwig, I have seen bits of it because Tanya girlfriend's been watching it, but it's such a clever move for Mitchell. Because he's basically, I mean, he's brilliant. He's done loads of amazing stuff, but he's sort of got into that world of being a panel person and a host of things and stuff like that. So for him to do that seems like a really smart move.
I mean, he essentially plays the same character in everything, so it might as well be the guy from Peep Show. And I watched all of Peep Show this year, so it's kind of came at a good time for me. It's Anna Maxwell Martin plays. And then the basic premise, if you haven't seen it, is that a detective goes missing and his twin brother, is a puzzle setter and he's a reclusive, like socially awkward puzzle maker. And the wife whose husband has gone missing, she calls the brother in to pretend to be him in the police department that he works in. He gets pulled in to try and solve why the brother's gone missing. And each episode, there's basically a puzzle at the heart of the murder. And so then he goes in to solve the murder mystery. And it sounds like it's going to be crap, but it's actually really, really good.
Yeah.
So I'd recommend that. And then my final show that I want to recommend is one that is set in feudal Japan.
Oh, I've heard about this. Yeah. I've not watched it.
And it's like Game of Thrones, but feudal Japan.
So Disney?
It's called Shogun.
Mm.
It's based on a book, and it's been adapted before, but this new version, it's so cinematic. It's largely in Japanese, which is quite rare for an American TV show. But the production design's incredible. The drama is unbelievable. Like we were talking about earlier, is that every episode has a start, a middle, and an end. And it's a really rich tapestry of a story that, like, you're sucked into every episode. I think it's like 10 episodes, and it's been renewed for a second series. And I imagine it's already won loads of awards, I think. Mm.
Some good stuff then. I didn't realise there was that much good stuff going on this year.
Yeah.
It seems like it's been a good year, actually.
Yeah.
For TV,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have any disappointments?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Go on.
they're returning things, mainly. I think The Bear, I think it tailed off slightly and lost focus and lost about what it was about, really.
And that's the kitchen drama on Disney.
Yeah. Not the kitchen sink drama.
Not the kitchen sink drama, no.
I just thought it lost its way. Like, it's been some of the most tense, anxiety-driving TV ever created, I think. And it did lose a sense of that. It lost its focus. And we didn't get any growth from any of the characters, I don't think.
I think this third season definitely felt like the wheels were spinning. There was no pedaling forwards going on.
Yeah.
It was just sort of stasis. I think they filmed season four very close together. So I'm hoping season four, which I think is out in 2025,
right,
moved some of it on. But I totally agree. I thought his last two episodes are some of the most boring TV I've seen in a long time, which is not what you want from The Bear.
No.
Did you watch that?
I watched the first season and a half I've watched of The Bear, and I got a bit bored of it.
Celebrity chef Heston Blumenthal says he can't watch it because it's too triggering for his anxiety.
Okay.
So that's a sort of
especially Three Fishes.
Yeah, God. Any other low lights?
Only Murders in the Building. Again, it's another one that I feel is
drags a bit.
It's dragged. It's tailed off. It's, I think, the use of guest stars in season, is it four they're on now? Yeah, heavy use, leaning into the guest stars. Whenever the guest stars are on screen, it just lost its way. It became boring. It was like the gag, this is an old gag, and you keep doing it, and it's not funny.
It's a bit of a, you get a lot with shows nowadays like that, where there's a bit of a gimmick to it. It's based around the main characters and the concept, and once the concept and the main characters are instilled in it, it's like, where do we go now? What else can we do? Because essentially those two main characters had a very clear arc in what they were trying to do. I got a bit bored of it as well.
Yeah,
we didn't finish series four. In fact, I need to go back and watch that. But I mean, there's just so much TV to get through, isn't there? I don't know. There's tons of things.
Let's go back to four channels.
Four's too many. Three maybe. Well, that's great. It sounds like there has been some really good TV this year. Shall we talk about James Bond?
Yeah, I suppose we'll have to.
That's why most people are here.
That's why people are here. Come on, give them what they want. So 2024, if you're listening to this in the future, when you're eating dogs and the apocalypse has happened, this is what happened in Anno Domini 2024, the year of James Bond. So in terms of Bond itself, I mean, the series celebrated a number of significant anniversaries this year. I think we should start there.
Yeah.
First of all, the big one was 70 years of the original Casino Royale TV broadcast. Jimmy Bond.
The big one.
Did you celebrate? How did you celebrate?
I'm still celebrating it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most days. Yeah.
And that's the TV play version of James Bond. That was the first screen adaptation of James Bond 70 years ago. Crazy. I don't know what to say about that, but that was the first big one.
Did we do an episode on covering that?
I think when we did
Casino
Royale, was it?
Yeah.
Didn't we watch? It's on YouTube, isn't it?
It is on YouTube, yeah.
I think we watched as much as we could.
I've forgotten it, so it can't be that impactful.
Anyway, I mean, the big one really was Goldfinger, the 60th anniversary of Goldfinger. Yeah. To many, I mean, including us, the best Bond film, right?
Yeah.
What to say about Goldfinger at 60? We went to Pinewood to see it.
We did.
Sorry, no invite for you, William.
No, I saw the photo pop up.
Yeah.
yeah. No, that's fine. I was busy.
But it was a fun event, wasn't it?
It was a fun event. Nice to watch it in that setting.
Yeah.
And we got to see a replica of an Aston Martin.
Yeah, one of the modern replicas with all the gadgets and stuff in it.
So that was good. And just being in the place where all that history's been made, you know, nearly all the Bond films have been made there. So it was, that was pretty good. I mean, these anniversaries are going to stack up now. They're just going to keep coming because obviously they made a lot of films.
Yeah.
Very close together.
I don't think we're going to be celebrating all of them.
60 years of Diamonds Are Forever coming up, yeah.
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 But yeah, I mean the Bond people seem to celebrate 60 years of Goldfinger. There was quite a lot of stuff happening for it. I'm just struggling to remember what it was.
Well, they did a week of events.
They did.
So there were numerous screenings at Pinewood. They were auctioning off parts of Pinewood.
Yeah.
Selling bricks. I suppose you weren't in there buying that, were you?
I do need some bricks actually for the garden. There you go.
Yeah, and they had it all well advertised at Pinewood Studios.
Yeah, and on the website they had they released a load of features and stuff about the making of Goldfinger. I think new merch was brought out for it as well, but probably way too expensive for most people. But yeah, I mean, we had 60 years of Dr. No, didn't we, 2 years ago? Then 60 years of From Russia With Love, but this was the big one.
Yeah.
And then next year we'll have 60 years of Thunderball.
I tell you, it's going to be a long time until 60 years of Die Another Day. That's going to be an interesting time to be. I mean, yeah, we would probably. I'm hoping I'm still here for that.
The jetpack screening.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of people in the distant future celebrating that.
And then we have 50 years of The Man with the Golden Gun, which they've remained quite quiet about on 007.com.
Which is surprising because 50 feels more like a round. I know they're both round numbers, but 50 feels. More significant.
Yeah, but with Goldfinger, you could do it like every few years and people would still go, yeah, that's 63 true. Years of Goldfinger.
Yeah.
Yeah, love that film. Man with Golden Gun's a little bit more quiet, isn't it? You've got to choose your battles.
Yeah.
There was a Christopher Lee documentary released this year, though, talking about A Man with the Golden Gun. Did you see that?
No,
it's... I can't remember what it's called. It's like The Many Lives of Christopher Lee or something, but it's on Sky. And I haven't personally seen it, but by all accounts, very good. Mm. And Christopher Lee, you know... One of the few highlights of that movie for me.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, completely, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there were certain things that... I know there was, like, various fan things going on for the Man with the Golden Gun, but for me, it's all about Christopher Lee, that movie.
Knick-knack.
And obviously a knick-knack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, obviously, big one for you, Brendan, 25 years of The World Is Not Enough.
Oh,
you were celebrating.
Oh, it's he's been talking about. His house is just decked out with
Jones decorations.
Well, that's just Jones.
Yeah, I put up a Christmas Jones during December. But, you know, it's 25 years of the soap opera that is The World Isn't Enough.
Mm.
And we've talked about it. It might have been a double episode. Did we? Did we drag that one out?
Did we drag out World Is Not Enough? That would have been quite late on, so I doubt it.
It felt like two episodes in one, yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's got some okay moments, but yeah, 25 years. Did they do a song dance about that on 007.com?
No. I know they always post like the anniversary of the premieres and stuff like that, but...
Well, next year, 30th of GoldenEye probably will.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. We were talking about GoldenEye earlier, Leavesden Studios.
Mm.
It'd be good to go.
Yeah, you can not invite me to.
Oh.
You'll be busy, don't worry, you'll be busy. You're always busy. So other stuff in the world of Bond, books, follow the world of books.
I've got some, I've not read them, but I know some things have been released.
Okay.
Go on.
Do you want to talk about it? Or?
Well, you've probably got reference to some of the fictional stuff.
Yes.
So there are some good books that I've not read, but I look quite good. So Spy Octane, The Vehicles of James Bond 1, actually isn't coming out until next week, I don't think.
Right, this is the... we're pre-recording this. If you're listening to this at Christmas, yeah, we have pre-recorded this, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's A.J. Chowdhury and...
Matthew Field.
Matthew Field's book, yes.
Yeah, and there's some... If you go online, you can see some of the pages. It looks incredible.
Yeah.
Really well put together.
It's a very limited release, though, I believe.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I think it's quite... And it's also quite expensive.
I think, it's on Amazon.
Right.
So you can buy it, but...
I mean, I've got some... the book will be out when we hear this, but I do know a little bit of what's in it. But apparently there's some really good detail around all the different DB5s.
Yeah, it looks really good. The way that they've designed it, it's like the perfect coffee table book for Bond fans.
And this edition only covers the cars of the 1960s. Mm. I think it goes up to Diamonds Are Forever, maybe. I think it sort of does the Connery era, but that does look very good.
Okay. Other one I've got, which sort of ties into what you've got, is Keeping 007 Alive.
I saw this advertised on Instagram.
Yes. Yeah. So this is a book by Mark Edlitz.
Yeah.
And it's speaking to all of the authors of the Bond fictional books.
Continuation books
and including like Higson and everyone about their, you know, how they've continued that, the story and the impact of it. So that sounds really good. I've not read that. And then there was one thing I picked up which was really interesting. It's Charlie Higson wrote an article for The Guardian.
Yes.
About the feedback that he got in writing his Bond books.
Okay.
Because it talks about the woke Bond.
Because he wrote on His Majesty's Secret Service.
Came
out, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he was talking about the response to modern day Bond writing and how it's very difficult because people view it. If you're not viewing Bond as sort of a character that exists in that point in time, you look at their backstory and you look at their feelings and everything, it's quite woke. So he did quite an interesting article about that. So well worth a read on that, just free on Guardian, That's a good one. And that's it. The only thing I've got here is George Lazenby's 85th birthday.
Very good. I've actually got a mention of George Lazenby, which we'll talk about in a second. Mm-hmm. But in terms of fictional books, there's a new series of books been announced by Vaseem Khan, the Q books, so Q spin-off books. Mm. The first book, Quantum of Menace, comes out next year. Okay. An interesting name.
Yeah.
And then there is also Kim Sherwood's second book, A Spy Like Me, was released, which I haven't read. Did you read the first one in the end? Because we went to the Kim Sherwood event, didn't we?
No, I didn't.
I read the book. I enjoyed it, but I haven't picked up the second one yet.
Right.
So there was that. We obviously had we have James Bond Day every year in October.
Yeah.
This year was very quiet in terms of nothing happening.
Didn't even realise it was on.
You were hoping for a big announcement.
I was hoping for a big announcement. Nothing happened. But we had all the movies came back to Prime, which they're already off, I think. But I mean, that's quite a... But they put 4 mini documentaries on Prime to celebrate.
Didn't
know
that.
Yeah. And also they've decked out Burlington Arcade in London.
I did want to go there. I was in the area that day, but
well, it's from September. It went from September the 18th to December the 31st, and they did something special for Day of the Dead. So they changed it all. But there's a 007 bar there. You can go and get cocktails.
Yeah. Buy loads of merch and interesting stuff.
So that's quite interesting to have an activation there. It's not a million miles away from where Eon's offices are, so I imagine that's why they host it there. But so yeah, very quiet James Bond Day this year. George Lazenby, he retired in July. So I didn't know he would. I mean, he's working.
Retired in 1969, didn't he?
Yeah.
Wasn't he working in resorts? Holiday resorts.
What do you mean?
He did. I'm pretty certain. There were like this was a while ago now, but I'm assuming he still does it or did it. Where that you would go for like a Bond holiday,
right?
In like the Maldives or something, and he would just be there, and you'd just like have cocktails with him and things like that.
I mean, that sounds feasible. I mean, basically, he if you don't know, he made one James Bond film on Her Majesty's Secret Service just to. Set the store. But in recent years, he's had a manager who's sort of made him available for autographs and events and merchandise and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. I've got a signed photo.
Because he was doing them at the BFI.
And we saw him at the BFI doing, on the Majesty's Secret Service, I think for the 50th of that film, because it would have been 2019, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, in July, he announced that he was going to retire because he's not been very well. He says, it hasn't been an easy decision for me, but it's time to announce my retirement from work. I won't be doing any more acting or making public appearances, doing any more interviews or signing any more autographs. It's been a fun ride, but getting older is no fun. I can now concentrate on spending more time with my family. My sincere gratitude to everyone out there for your love and support over the years. It's meant a lot to me, George. I should have done that with an Australian accent. But yeah, I mean, he has.
You do it again.
What, how old did you say he was? 85. What did you say?
85.
Yeah.
I mean, he's earned his retirement, yeah. Really, hasn't he? He has been frail, or he's seemed frail over the last few years. So.
Well, happy retirement, and you know, he only made one Bond film, but it's a bloody good one.
It was a bloody good one.
Well, you missed your opportunity to get him on the podcast now, so.
Yeah, that's true.
We get AI.
Yeah.
We'll just get an AI George Lazenby. Insert AI George Lazenby clip here. So there was that. And then finally, I just want to talk about in the year in Bond, we talked about it last year, the James Bond game from IO. Is it IO Interactive?
Yeah, yeah. Still not out.
Do you know much about that?
It's gone really quiet. I'm assuming they went, because the reason that everyone knew about it is because they were hiring developers for it.
Yeah.
So whenever you do that, everyone jumps on it and goes, oh, you know, there's a new game coming out. It looks like it's going to be a Bond game. It'll take them 2 years to develop it, 3 years to develop it. So it's all gone quiet now because they're probably still in early stages of creating that. So there's not really anything to show yet.
Yeah. One of the people, producers on the game, did an interview earlier this year, and they said, what's exciting about that project is that we actually got to do an original story. It's not a gamification of a movie. It's completely beginning and becoming a story, hopefully for a big trilogy out there in the future. And equally important and exciting, it's a new Bond. It's a Bond we built from the ground up for gamers. And it's from the people who made Hitman.
Yes.
And you're a Hitman fan, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, if you're not aware of video games, what are the Hitman games like?
Hitman games are fantastic. There's loads of them now. They've been going for quite a long time. But basically, you play the role of a Hitman and you are tasked with missions. So you'll be in Dubai or something and you have to kill a person and you have to work out how to kill that person. You can change your outfit so you can sort of sneak in through disguises, you can do a lot of hiding, you can speak to people to sort of trick them into going to things. Essentially, you have to assassinate people. The whole point of it is you assassinate people. The later games are fantastic because they're quite open world, so you can really do anything. And you can interact with a lot of people. So it lends itself quite nicely to the Bond world, because if you can do that, linear Bond games don't traditionally work that well.
Because they end up just being run and gun, don't they?
Well, Bond as a film character is quite interesting because he's a character. Bond as a computer game character is not interesting because he's a man with a gun. It can be anything. It can be Mission Impossible. It can be, you know, all of those sort of standard things. You look at GoldenEye. GoldenEye wasn't good because it was Bond. GoldenEye was good because it was a good game.
Yeah.
And it was a good shooting game. If you created a new version of GoldenEye, it wouldn't work that well because there's so many of those games that are really good now. So the idea of it being more about espionage as opposed to shooting people is a smart move, because just shooting people is quite dull. And you can build a character around espionage. You can't build one very well around shooting.
And do the Hitman games have an element of driving in there?
Never.
No, so that'll be the key if they can nail that.
They don't want to get driving in there.
But they're not going to get away with releasing a Bond game without a car.
They're not going to put cars in it. They can't put cars in it.
I mean, if it's an origin story for a new Bond, they might build up to cars.
Yeah.
But they'll have the gadgets. I mean, imagine there's gadgets in
there are gadgets. So you can collect gadgets. You can get like you know, all sorts of like clever bombs and like pen bombs and stuff like that. So you could probably take one of the Hitman games and just make it Bond, and it would be fine. You'd go, that's quite smart. And I assume that they'll probably link back to some of the characters. So you probably might go to locations that Bond has been to. They won't make the story the same, so he might, you know, go to Austria or something, in Russia or in places, and do missions there. But it will be, I assume, it will be more like a sort of a nod to those places and the scenery and how it looks.
But if you think about like
Fort Knox, I better go to Fort Knox.
Yeah, like if you think about the opening mission of GoldenEye, which is infiltrate a base, plant the bombs. That's perfect for something like Hitman, right? Because it doesn't have to end with the killing; it can just end with the planting.
Yeah, but
the
thing about Hitman is they don't tend to do really overt places like that that are military installations. They tend to do like shopping malls.
And, right, interesting.
So smaller things, golf clubs.
Yeah, okay. Like,
so you might be in a golf club trying to kill someone.
I mean, it could be incredible.
I mean, it would, if they followed the model of Hitman, it would be really good. Problem is they've got Hitman. So if it's very similar to Hitman, then people are like, well, this is just a reframing of Hitman. So there's a risk that, you know, it might not work. But the thing about Hitman is that it's all digital online, so the missions change over time. So you can go into, say you went to the golf club, Goldfinger, not saying that they would specifically go to that, but one week you could be trying to kill Goldfinger and the next week you're trying to kill someone completely different, and the way you do it is different, so it's quite open-ended in this.
Oh, okay.
Which is, it's got to be on online focus as opposed to just being a linear game.
And this idea of being a new Bond who's been built up from the ground,
yeah,
do you think, are we going to get, I mean, obviously who'll look like a new Bond, so it won't be based on Daniel Craig, for example, like they had the later games, or Pierce Brosnan, it will be a brand new Bond who looks, do you think you'll be able to customise them, or do you think that will be
problem with, well, the whole point of Hitman is that it's a bald man,
yeah,
that has a very generic face.
That's why.
So logically he can be disguised. If you're got a character that looks like Daniel Craig, you can't follow the Hitman model, because then you, dressing up doesn't make any difference.
I mean, Bond never rarely gets dressed up in disguise.
No.
I mean, unless you're Roger Moore. Oh yeah, unless you're Roger Moore.
Yeah. That's what we want, isn't it? Yeah. That's what we want. So I'm assuming it'd be more about the interactions and solving things different ways. So, you know, you've got to kill somebody. What's the best way to kill them?
It'll be a single player game, or will there be an online element to it?
The Hitman one is all single player.
Yeah.
The levels are... People create levels, I think, on them. So,
oh, interesting.
So you can create levels that other people do. So you choose who the target is. You choose how to kill them and stuff. So I'm assuming... I don't know. I mean, it could be an online one, but you make them online, it just gets messy.
Yeah.
Do couch co-op mode. You play as Jinx as well, alongside Bond.
Why do you pick Jinx?
Why not?
Good point, yeah. Dominic Graves.
Agent Triple X. Yeah, well, if it's a new Bond built from the ground up, then I think that's quite an exciting prospect. Do you think we'll have a voice actor for him? Does Hitman talk?
Yeah, he's got... I don't know who does the voice acting, but he's done it for the whole time, so...
Right, okay.
Yeah, he's probably quite... I mean, he might be a famous actor, I don't know.
I wonder who'll be the voice of the new Bond.
Mm-hmm.
Exciting to find out. But maybe 2025 or even further away than that?
Never know with games. The time to create games now is just such a mess. Like in the old days you could go, like, you know, somebody starts creating a game, it takes 2 years to come out. Sometimes now it takes like 6-7 years to release a game. Look at some of the biggest games in the world, things like Skyrim and
GTA 6.
I think some of those are taking longer than 6 years now, yeah, to create a new version. So
wow.
Who knows with games? It's such a complicated process to make games. But Hitman is a relatively simple process. They're not building I don't think it'll be open world, but...
Who knows? But these big... I mean, if we're talking about, like, villain lairs and stuff like that, they can be big, right?
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I'm excited to hear more about that, and I guess that's something we'll probably be talking about as long as we are talking about Bond 26.
Yeah.
Should we take a break?
Yeah.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Well, that was the year in Bond. We'll talk about Bond 26 shortly, but why don't we talk about the movies that we've enjoyed this year? Again, why don't you tease it a little bit and tell us a little bit about the movie and see if we can guess what
it is. It's about a bear.
Cocaine Bear. You loved Cocaine Bear, didn't you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, do you want to start, Brendan? Because he started last time.
Okay.
You want to talk about?
All right, a curmudgeonly teacher.
Yes,
is given the task of looking after the kids that can't go away.
Movie of the year.
Christmas.
Movie of the year. The holdovers. Yeah. You're talking.
Correct.
About. Yes.
Yeah. Go on, which really should have come out last year, but got released
in the
UK. January.
Yeah, we got it in January, didn't we?
Yeah, because very much it's a Christmas film. I think it goes into all-time greats. I think that's going to be a Christmas film.
Instantly.
When I watched it in January last year, thinking, this is really annoying, I was thinking, I can't wait to watch this at Christmas.
Yeah.
I've not watched it yet, but...
So Paul Giamatti plays the teacher, the reluctant teacher, who everyone thinks is a bit of an arsehole. And then he's left with these kids that have nowhere to go, the holdovers.
Yeah.
During the festive period. The whole cast are fantastic. It's heartwarming. It gives you hope for humanity, really.
Wow.
And he's great in it, isn't he? He didn't win Oscar for it, didn't he? Mm-hmm. Divine Randolph Joy. She won Best Supporting Actor, didn't she?
Yeah.
And she is fantastic in it. In fact, the whole cast is. Yeah, Divine Joy Randolph. Sorry, she was, and she's also in what we were just talking about, wasn't she? Only Murders. She plays the cop in Only Murders. Yeah. She's great in it. Alexander Payne directed it. But it's in my top five of the year, easily. Top three, I would say.
Probably top one for me.
Top one, film of the year for you. Great.
I think so. Yeah. I can't wait to see it again, actually.
I said to Natalie, this is our Christmas movie and we will watch it for the festive period because it's so festive. Yeah. In a dark festive way.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But with a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
I did have Holdovers as my top one. I think 2024 has been a bit of a... The start of the year, I watched a lot. I tried to get through all of the Oscar films, and there were some good ones. The only other one I've got on the list here is All of the Strangers, which I thought was very good.
Oh,
I wouldn't class it as like my favourite of the year, but I haven't got many this year that I would class as really good films. Since the Oscar films that came out with like the Holdovers and stuff, there's nothing that I've been really that impressed with for the past few months.
Well, we're facing the repercussions of last year's strikes, so we're now in that window where. Obviously, nothing was being made.
And we're just coming out of it with Paddington in Peru. Yeah.
That's not in your top movies then of the year?
It's not in any movie list I've got, apart from the most boring.
Wow.
Oh, dear.
So you've got nothing to recommend?
That's it, no. I've got absolutely nothing that I liked this year.
I'll take you right back to the start of the year as well. Another couple of movies that I really loved right at the beginning of the year. One of them starring a James Bond alumni, Jeffrey Wright, as an author.
American fiction.
Which, he's a black author who is also a teacher. I can't remember. He's struggling to make waves in a fiction.
Yeah.
He sort of had some book published, but never really like hit heights. And there's another author who has a really big hit with a book that he absolutely hates. He's a massive snob. And also his mum, is one of his parents, I can't remember, one of the his parents die. And he has to come together with his siblings to sort of sort out the estate. And his brother's a total mess, but they're both quite successful, I seem to think. Whereas he's the one that's struggling.
Yeah.
And it's just a fantastic comedy. It's really well observed. It says a lot about the film industry as well as the TV industry.
Yeah, it's meta.
Yeah. And Jeffrey Wright is just absolutely fantastic in it. And I absolutely loved that movie at the start of the year. And I think that's on Prime as well.
I mean, it was very quickly went to Prime because it was originally, the cinema release was quite short, wasn't it, for that? Mm-hmm. It was basically a streaming film. But I can never remember if that Oscar period, because that's one of the Oscar period films, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can never remember if they're just before Christmas or after Christmas, but I would put that in the top list, yeah.
And then my other Oscar favourite, which again came out in the UK here this year, was about the horrors of and banality of evil in a concentration camp, which is...
One Life.
No. Zone of Interest.
Oh, right.
One Life. Was that... That was this year as well.
That was also this year. That's also on my list. Okay. Yeah. There were good sort of films to see back to back. One Life and Zone of Interest. Zone of Interest for me was, that's the Jonathan Glazer film. For me, I think I've never had a film that stuck with me for as long afterwards as that movie. You know, it's just absolutely haunting in like, you know, how it shows, you know, how banal evil can be and how bureaucratic evil can be. And have you both seen it?
No.
Oh my God. I mean, there's a scene where, I don't want to, but basically it's about a family, the family of the commandant who is in charge of Auschwitz. And it's about their lives really with Auschwitz and the Holocaust happening around them. And so much of it is told through the sound of the Holocaust. So you can hear the, the furnace is burning and you can hear people screaming and being tortured, and this is all happening while they're discussing like the decoration of their house, or they're having people bringing shopping to their house. People in the concentration camp are doing chores for them. It's absolutely haunting. And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it won Oscars and all sorts of bits and bobs. But
have you got anything after the Oscar films earlier in the year?
I do. Have you got any?
I don't, actually.
I sat going through all the films that released this year and I couldn't find anything.
When did Poor Things come out?
That was this year.
Yeah, that was this year. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't really do anything for me.
No?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought it was alright. I wouldn't put it on my best of the year list.
Yeah.
Stylistically, I thought it was very interesting, visually interesting.
Curioso.
Yeah. Yeah. Different to a lot of the dirge that is.
It had a Tim Burton vibe for me.
Yeah. You didn't like that, though.
I think it's one of those films where I completely forgot that I watched it and I remember thinking that was all right, that was quite interesting. At no point since then have I ever thought about that film ever again until I looked up the films released this year and I forgot Poor Things. Yeah, that was all right.
I also had some issues with it's probably completely misguided, but the gender politics of it, which was the premise is a woman dies and the body is implanted with a new consciousness. So there's a full grown woman who's brought back to life, but she has the mind of someone that's born on day zero and she has to learn to live in the world. And it goes from being just newborn to being a prostitute. Hmm. And that to me, like, was there's more to being a woman than just the sexual side of it, and to me I was a bit like I'm not sure about that, but Emma Stone produced it, she was happy with it, so maybe I'm thinking too much about
it's good.
I really liked Civil War.
I haven't seen that.
The Alex
Garland. Yeah
I really liked that. I thought that was a really sort of interesting look at American life and whatnot.
Was the film with Millie Bobby Brown where she fights a dragon out this year?
Damsel,
yeah. That's not my list.
Most disappointing. So I like that. I also really liked The Substance, the Demi Moore film.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that.
I mean, if you're of nervous disposition, it's not for you. It's very viscerally body horror,
that's
gruesome.
That's not for me.
No, I thought it was, in terms of, like you said about Poor Things, things you've seen that felt like nothing else, this really felt like nothing I'd ever seen before.
Yeah.
The last final 30 minutes are absolutely unhinged. It's on, I think it's on Mubi now. I mean, if you've got the disposition for really gruesome, weird horror, body horror, satire, then yeah, I would recommend it. In terms of blockbusters, I really like Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Did you see that?
I watched that 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I think about Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, all of the Planet of the Apes films, the modern ones, they're all well-made films for that sort of mainstream, high-budget type of film. I think they're all very interestingly made. And it's probably one of the better ones because, what is it, the fourth one from the modern versions?
Yeah.
So by that point, yeah, I remember starting to watch it thinking, oh, this is going to drag a bit because, you know, they're really scraping the barrel. They're using hawks now as a tool to do stuff, but by the end of it I did think it was very good. I mean, it's getting very complicated now.
They're not the Statue of Liberty down yet.
That's coming.
That's not there yet. I mean, it did feel a bit Toy Story 4 to me, like you told a really compelling story across three movies that were all brilliant. The third one was fantastic, had a definitive ending, and I was like, oh, I don't know if I need to see this fourth one. But I was with you. I started watching it, and then by the end, I was like, "This is fantastic."
They are good. I mean, essentially, if you those stories are very, very much like if you they weren't about apes and you just had them about humans, the stories are quite good stories. Yeah. You could do them about humans, but all of the CGI and everything is well done, so it sort of fits in quite nicely. It's not like the Tim Burton one, which is how they could have turned out.
And then one last movie, just as a one I really liked, is Anora, which is quite a new movie at the time of recording, which is about a stripper.
Okay.
So see, it's piqued your interest already, and she marries an oligarch's son, this Russian oligarch's son, and it's sort of like a Pretty Woman type thing, but it's so it's sort of very extreme. But like at about the halfway point, it goes absolutely bonkers. Mm-hmm. And just, it's a very, very funny sort of madcap movie, which I would recommend anyone.
Is it as good as Pretty Woman?
It's better than, well, yeah, I mean, it's not got Julia Roberts in it. Okay. It's got this actor called Mikey Madison. She plays the woman, and she is, I've never seen her in it. Well, I have seen her in stuff before, but never really noticed her before, but she is sensational in it. Mm. Well worth watching. Very funny, very moving as well. It's got a good ending to it. So, yeah, I'd recommend that one. Okay. Anora. Shall we talk Bond 26?
Oh, yeah.
Finally.
Not much to talk about, though.
Yeah, I mean, if you're listening to it in the future, there might never have been the Bond 26 if things went to shit.
No Time to Die was the last Bond film.
But if you're, you might be listening to the future, I mean, you've got Bond 30, and it's a remake of On Her Majesty's Secret Service featuring...
AI George Lazenby.
AI George Lazenby, On Her Majesty's Secret Service 2, George Lazenby. And you can watch a version with Roger Moore as you can watch whatever version you want. Yeah, choose which Bond is in your movie. Yeah, well done for living that long. And what's it like underground? How is it eating bugs?
And congratulations for still listening to this rubbish.
Yeah,
on that point.
The 2024 is Bond 26. This is where we're at the moment. So no news.
No.
But I mean, there are a few things to talk about. So one thing to say about what we know about what Eon is up to at the moment is that they're not working on Bond 26, at least what they're telling people.
Yeah.
The one thing we do know they're working on, and that when we talk about Eon, we talk about Barbara Broccoli, Michael G. Wilson, and all the people who make the Bond films. They are working on an Othello movie. Do you know this?
No.
So Daniel Craig, of previously as of
who?
Hope's Parish.
Up and coming.
The star of Layer Cake and other films. He starred in an adaptation of Shakespeare's Othello on Broadway with David Oyelowo. And they are currently working on a movie adaptation of Othello with Daniel Craig. And that's the next thing that they will produce, not Bond 26. And we know this because they've registered Othello as a film company. And that's how we always know when they're working on something, because it gets registered as a company. That's how these things work. So the next thing they'll make is Othello. And the one thing about this version of Othello on Broadway is that it was set in the Middle East. Mm. It was set during the Gulf War. I'm not really familiar with Othello. Are you?
I'm very familiar with it.
Go on, tell us a bit about Othello. What is Othello about?
Well, it's a Shakespearean play. It's about soldiers. I can't remember which. I don't know, it specifies which war it was part of. But basically, Othello is a black soldier, and it's all about his relationships and stuff that he has with a load of the other cast. But the thing about Othello is it's very well. It's all about. The way that the script is shaped is that it's very open. There's loads and loads of characters at the start, and over the course of the play, it gets more tense and tense until it's just two people in a room, sort of resolving this problem. But it's the Lawrence Fishburne version of it was fantastic. The film,
right? Okay,
really, really good. But that was essentially set in Shakespearean times, or where he set it. I've not seen any modern versions of it.
Okay, so this new version, Daniel Craig is Iago.
Yeah.
David Oyelowo.
So you know Iago,
Othello. Right.
Iago is basically, he's the other, one of the other main characters. Iago was the name of the character in Aladdin. He was the name of the parrot in Aladdin.
Yes.
Because Iago is meant to be two-faced.
Right.
So he's like tricks people into stuff. So he basically tricks all the characters within Othello to believing stuff that isn't true, and eventually he's the reasoning for Othello's demise at the end of it, or I can't actually remember if Othello dies at the end. I'm assuming he does, but yeah, Iago's really good character. But that's a reference to Aladdin there, which I wasn't expecting.
There we go. I think it's set during Venetian time. At the height of Venetian times. Anyway, that is what Eon is working on, and this year, Daniel Craig is starring in Luca Guadagnino's Queer.
I've seen bits of this.
Yeah. And he is heavily, I mean, at this point you might even know, but like, he's heavily tipped to get an Oscar nomination for it. It's quite a, you know, one of those sort of performance. He's been working up to this, right, with the dancing video and all the crazy front covers he's been doing. Like, he's really trying to separate himself from the world of Bond. So Queer is very much a gay love story. Daniel Craig plays the older man. It's quite an out there performance, but apparently, you know, he's great in it. If he gets the Oscar nomination, then Othello, you know, they're going to, you know, hit the ground running with that one, because then all of a sudden it becomes very bankable. They'll find the funding. And the one thing that we do know, or one thing that is heavily rumoured, is that at Venice, Barbara Broccoli had meetings with the Qatar film people, and they got funding for Othello, or they're getting funding for, to film Othello in Qatar, because it's the Gulf War. And part of the deal was that the Qatari people would then, or Qatar would then feature in Bond 26. So bringing Bond to the Middle East, which they've never done. They've never filmed in the Middle East before. They filmed in Egypt, which is about as close as they've got. But they've never filmed in the Middle East before. So it would be a new sort of frontier for
And that was, when they filmed in Egypt, that was a really in-depth view of that part of the world. They just pour around a pyramid. Pyramids!
Pyramids! So that's one of the few things we know about that. We also know that there is, the E.ON people are putting on a production of Buena Vista Social Club on Broadway in 2025. Because like, behind James Bond, E.ON does loads of stuff in terms of like theatre. Like, it's Barbara's big passion, isn't it? Bond is really the thing that brings in the money for them to do their passion stuff. Michael G. Wilson, I don't think, really is that bothered about it.
Okay.
But yeah, so Bond 26 is way off on the horizon, because it's going to, if, even if Othello goes into production next year, which it could do, it's not going to come out for another year, which then puts Bond production back to 2028, which then put, sorry, is that right? 25 to 26.
Looking forward Bond to next year's podcast.
To 27, maybe Bond released in 28, Bond 26 in 2028, which would put it, how many years after, when did,
well, no, it's 7 years. It's 2021, it's meant to be 20, so it'd be so eight.
One of the biggest gaps.
But
the biggest
gap. That is unless we see Wilson and Broccoli relinquish control of Bond.
Yeah, and that is the alternative.
And then they'll come back every 6 months.
Because if the, so the thing that, like, we also know is that MGM is now owned by Amazon. And that's the big difference now between, if we were talking about Bond 26 and it was just MGM and E.ON, MGM would not be in any fit state to greenlight Bond at any time. So the difference is now that MGM is owned by Amazon. They're put, I mean, in fact, if you go onto Prime, in fact, anything brought out by MGM is Amazon's MGM or
Amazon
something.
MGM Studios.
So they can take their time, and they will want, they do want to take their time, because when they do it, the thing with Amazon is, they don't have to make any money off the off this deal. It wasn't like when Disney bought Lucasfilm or Pixar, and they expect them to churn these things out
Lord
quickly.
Of the Rings.
Yeah, look, yeah, they can take their time to do these things, and they will want, when they start Bond, they will want, they'll want a whole empire around it before they start it. And you can't just say, like, Disney owed money on all these different things that they bought. They needed Star Wars out the gate as soon as they bought Lucasfilm, right? Amazon doesn't need to do that, because Amazon doesn't even have to be in the streaming game, right? So they'll need to be, they'll want everything in position before they can move forward with it.
Yeah, well, it's quite a big risk to do it wrong. So
exactly.
And it, they, and based on a lot of previous streaming decisions made for Star Wars and stuff like that, it does go wrong pretty easily if you just base it on the delivery of the, you know, assets and everything. You want to get things out. But if they're going to learn anything, it's don't rush it. I imagine they, we talked about this in many podcasts before, where, you know, they want to make, they make series of Bond and stuff like that. I think a lot of people are scared of doing that now, because they've realised that it's a bad choice and you mess up your IP.
Yeah, you look at the failure of what they did with Marvel. They announced show after show after show. And now
nobody,
they've come back, like, and they've scaled back on that massively and cancelled most projects.
Star Wars is effectively, they've really run that into the ground, and the IP is actually in bad position now because people associate it with rubbish stuff. But they won't want to do that with Bond because it's too risky.
It's way too risky, and if you think about the times where they've rushed Bond films into production to hit whatever quota there is, Quantum of Solace, Spectre wasn't really rushed,
just a bad film.
They got the rights,
but they got the rights, and then they wanted to use those rights quickly. Moonraker, but Spyro Love Me was massive, and they wanted to capitalise on that. And then Moonraker came out, and Thunderball, capitalising the success, but that was massive.
And I don't think that if you look at something like Star Wars or Marvel, there's a lot to play with. Like you can create 10 series off the just side things going on, and there's still enough to go on. Bond, if you start diverting away from the main character, it's just going to be like, what's the point in why have you gone off in this tangent? We only care about Bond. We don't care about all the other little things going on.
Yeah, that's the difficulty with Bond, isn't it? It's so centered on one person. Yeah, there's periphery around it.
Yeah.
But you've got to do it right to make it.
Well, going back to what Charlie Higson said in his Guardian thing, it's that Bond, nobody cares about the story around him. They need him to be just a character that is doing the thing he's doing at that time. If you suddenly start going, why is he feeling like that? What caused him to feel like that? You're like, well, I don't know. That's not.
Yeah.
It's not what I'm interested in. I just want to see that man in that position. So, yeah. Even if you did anyone, if you did Moneypenny or if you did Q, it just adds these sort of elements of story to it. Like, I didn't care about any of that. Like, it might be a good story. And sometimes, look at the Penguin. They're doing it at the moment, which
apparently
is doing really,
great.
Which is doing really, really well. But it doesn't tie into the main story. They're not going to then go take the Penguin back into the DC universe. It's just a thing that's an offshoot of it that has no impact. And they've done that so many times. They're like Gotham. I think Gotham did quite well. I've never watched it. But it means nothing.
It deepens the brand, doesn't it?
She's just selling off everything just to make a moderately enjoyable series that people who don't really have that quite a taste quite like just have anything on.
Have I pitched my Bond spin-off to you both? Okay. But here's what if I was Amazon and I was looking to expand the world of Bond.
Yeah.
I don't know if I talked about this before, but my idea would be Star Wars and The Matrix had animated spin-offs where you get different animation studios to do different versions of your thing.
Yeah.
It just to get a bunch of animation studios to do pre-title sequences. So you can imagine like an Aardman Bond pre-title sequence. And it's a self-contained sequence, an action sequence. It doesn't have to have too much development. It's not canon. So you can have lots of different... You could have anime pre-title sequence. You could have, a stop-motion animation sequence. You could have all these different... You could have a Bluey pre-title sequence, right? And then you could have, that idea of having a Bond spin-off that has no impact on the Bond universe. It's not canon. It just exists in its own right, like Star Wars Visions or something like that.
I see where you're going with this, but I think the problem with Bond is that if you look at Marvel, you look at Star Wars, you look at DC, all of those ones... That universe is massive, but the main audience is dorks like me who read all of those things and care about all that stuff. You look at the What If that Marvel did.
Yeah.
Not many people like that.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you watch it, you go, this has nothing to do with anything that I care about. It's not part of the MCU, I'm not bothered about it. So dorks like me who like it go, I know all these characters, I know what you're doing. Anybody who just watches MCU just goes, well, it's irrelevant. I don't care about that. It's just a little bit of fun that's going on. So I don't think Bond is a strong enough IP universe. It doesn't have a universe, does it? It has a character. That's it just has a character and some peripheral characters, but it doesn't have you look at Marvel, there are every single character in Marvel has a whole loads of series of comics backstory behind it. Nobody in Bond has lore behind it. There's a bit with the fictional books and stuff like that, but not that's a very specific group of people that like that.
But then that's why I think a pre-titles, because it could just be an action sequence.
It's a nice idea. I think it would work, especially if you did it in the new one was getting released in November in 2028, and you do a run-up of these nice things. It's builds up the excitement and stuff like that. But as a standalone project, if you did it now, I think it would bottom because people are like, I don't care about that. Not interested in it.
So in the meantime, where do people go for their spy fix? Because Day of the Jackal has just been released.
Yeah. And also, yeah.
And that has a very Bond fit, especially the music.
I've heard that, yeah. There's a new, Ben Whishaw's in a new spy series on Netflix this Christmas. It's called Black Doves.
Okay.
But Slow Horses, I would say, is...
Slow Horses.
I've only done one episode of that, and I did like it.
Yeah.
Night Manager will be returning.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah.
So there's stuff out there for...
To keep people ticking over. I would say Slow Horses, is the best espionage thing outside of Bond. Should we talk about some of the Bond 26 rumours from this year?
Oh, yes.
So after we recorded last time, I think it was after we recorded last Christmas, the rumour was that Paul Mescal was going to be James Bond with an older actor playing an older version of James Bond. And it was going to be a passing of the baton sort of movie where there would be an old James Bond who passed on
Dial of Destiny.
Yeah, to a new James Bond.
Was that this year? That was last year, wasn't it?
Yeah. Dial of Destiny was last year, yeah. Okay. How do you like the sound of that? Can you see Paul Mescal as James Bond?
No.
Too young.
I can. I think the thing about Bond is that I can see it going any way if it's done well. Like, if that was done well, I think it might work. The problem is that any time you try and pass the baton from established character to another established character, it's always quite messy because you either really love the first character and then you don't want it to be passed on. But if you're passing the baton between somebody who nobody really cares about and somebody else who nobody really cares about, nobody's passing the baton really to anyone. So it's a bit of a complicated...
It was an idea that they had before... Was it License to Kill? They looked at having a young James Bond, and there was going to be an older James Bond. And I think Anthony Hopkins was going to be the older mentor, and it just never... They said at the time that's not going to work. So that rumor from The Sun to me is total BS.
Yeah, I don't think that the Bond franchise will ever divert away from the standard principle of there's a man, he's taken on the mantle of it, starting again. Here we go. As soon as you start trying to throw in new dynamics, if you're passing the mantle on, you're building up a relationship between two people which don't need a relationship, and you're essentially going to have to care about both of those people. So the reason why they're passing on the baton, and you know, the fears they've got of it and stuff, nobody wants to know that, because it's suddenly you're building up a character that isn't a bulletproof, you know, womanizing assassin. You're building up like a character that people don't really care about.
If we skip ahead to then January of this year, which was there was a lot of talk of Christopher Nolan directing the next James Bond film. He eventually told Deadline that the rumours were pure bollocks.
Is that a direct quote?
That's a direct quote.
Okay.
Nolan for Bond?
Yeah, I think he'd be fine.
Would he do it backwards though? Or...
No, he'd have to have a strict, like, you know, like, come on, mate.
Well, that's the problem, right? Nolan wants complete creative control. It's the one thing they don't give people.
I think he could, if you gave him carte blanche to go, can you create a great film? He would create a great film. But if you said you need to create a Bond film within this remit, it'd be like,
And he's just won an Oscar, right? He's not in a position now to be like...
Doesn't need it, does he?
He doesn't need it.
No.
So it's a good idea, not so great. In March, The Sun said that Aaron Taylor-Johnson had been offered the role. And this was at least 2 years after they first linked him to playing James Bond.
Yeah.
Aaron Taylor-Johnson?
We've talked about it as many times. There's different ways you can go with bringing back Bond. You can go smart, underground, sort of take it into more of a, you know, an interesting angle where you're trying something different. Maybe get somebody who is... you know, a younger Bond, maybe developing Bond, stuff like that, or you could go really obvious mainstream stuff. Aaron Taylor-Johnson for me is very much in that sort of Henry Cavill thing. I think he'd be great. I think he'd be a good Bond, but it's a very specific type of Bond. He's just going to be a big action star, isn't he? But he's likable. I think he's very good. I wouldn't have been annoyed if he was going to be Bond.
Yeah,
I agree. Yeah, be fine. I think it would be pretty pedestrian.
Yeah, it's not a very bold choice. I don't know. I'm sure he could do a good job. I'd be happy if it was him. Yeah. And not long after that, The Sun reported that, according to unnamed sources, that Aaron Taylor-Johnson had been offered the role. Is they reported that Cillian Murphy had been offered the role, or it was being linked to the role, which is very close to when he was up for the Best Actor Oscar.
Hmm.
So to me, it just screams they're just trying to get the clicks.
Yeah. From Isn't he too old?
Too old, too short, too Irish. I mean,
Come on. Yeah, I mean, you could if they changed the focus of what Bond is, and you're trying to use an older Bond and stuff, but it wouldn't be the same format as what it is now. It'd be completely different. Yeah. He's not got the same sort of coolness that you'd expect from the standard Bond.
I mean, he screams villain to me.
Yeah. Well, he famously auditioned to play Batman in, I think, Batman Begins, and then ended up playing the Scarecrow, because he is more the Scarecrow than he is Batman. Then, skipping ahead in the year, we got some director rumours, because the thing that we need to remember about Bond 26 is that before we get a Bond, they'll want to get a director in place.
Yeah.
And so this is when the director rumours came up, and there was lots of names linked at this time. Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah.
Obviously, he just made 2 Dune movies.
Mm-hmm.
See that?
Yep.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, but I have seen the Dune movies.
Yeah, okay. And then he obviously did Sicario, which is more Bond-like than the Dune movies. David Michaud, who's an Australian director. I don't know if you've ever seen any of his movies. No. Yeah. Kelly Marcel.
Kelly Marcel, I do know about, which is ridiculous, because that's Venom, isn't it?
Yeah.
All 3 Venom films. So it's not just like she's done one good one. She's done all 3 of them, and they get mixed reactions, those films.
Yeah, she's the writer on them, isn't she? And then directed the 3rd one, I think.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Well, Last Dance.
Yeah.
Last Dance. But
did you see that?
I've not seen that. I'm not going to watch it. It's not on streaming yet, is it? It's still on cinema. It'll be a long time until I watch that. I'm definitely going to
By the time this comes out, it might be on streaming.
Yeah. But that's... Surely... I don't think she's done many other... I think a lot of her films, she's probably done not that many films now, and most of them are that same sort of ilk, so I don't think they'd give it to her it's a pretty big jump up from Venom, The Last Dance, the 26th Bond film.
Yeah, Tom Hardy is Bond, though.
I mean, he could be the baddie, couldn't he?
He'd be a great baddie.
Silly voice. Yeah.
And then the person who is most strongly linked with Edward Berger, who did the movie, he's a German director, he did All Quiet on the Western Front, the Netflix film that was Oscar nominated, and he's got a new film out this year called Conclave, which I have seen, and it's a sort of a thriller around the selection of a new pope, which sounds deadly boring, but actually it's quite interesting.
Okay.
But he quickly also came out and said it was total bollocks.
Okay.
He didn't say pure bollocks, but he said, get rid of this rumour, it's not true.
Okay.
And what's John Glenn up to?
Yeah.
Martin Campbell,
yeah. He's sat by the phone.
Yeah. Sam Mendes. I mean, they're all busy. And then in October, we had MGM's head, Jennifer Salk. She said, there's lots of ideas about actors that have popped up that I thought are interesting. There are lots of different ways we could go. We have a good relationship with Eon and Barbara and Michael. We're not looking to disrupt the way these wonderful films are made. For us, we are taking their lead. The global audience will be patient. We don't want too much time between films, but we are not concerned at this point. So as I said, MGM not in a rush to make a Bond film.
No, the global audience will be patient. However, you're going to need an audience, and the longer they leave it, Where's the next?
You're going to be hitting the Gen Z audience, and they're not going to care.
No, so you're going to really struggle.
Yeah. Also, I mean, one thing to say about that is that, and I've probably said this before, but like, when franchises are rushed, that's when things fall off.
Yeah.
Right? Especially if you think about horror, if a horror movie is a hit, most of the time they want to rush a sequel out, and they get worse and worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, but you can get away with it with horror, because the loss of quality is sort of lessened in those ones. Whereas I suppose if you look at Marvel, they went from having the most successful film franchise ever up to Endgame, and then went mad and just released stuff for 2 years solidly and ruined it. But I always wonder if they'd have stopped and left it for 2 years, if they would, that would have diminished the interest in it, or if people would have gone, finally it's back, there's a great new film coming out. But with Bond, there's a much bigger risk with it, because it's not... It feels to me like, over the course of our lives, Bond has always been sort of bubbling all the time, and everyone's excited. I feel we're at a point now where there's so much stuff coming up, so many new things, especially with streaming stuff, that leaving it too long means it just gets down and down and down, to the point where at some point in the future, Bond will disappear out of the global consciousness, and people will have other things to care about. So the longer you leave it just becomes less and less interesting, because all the people who really care about it are getting older and older, and they're less likely to go to cinema and watch these things. So I think I do think they need to hurry up with it to sort of drive it on, because you know there's a lot of people that probably only know Bond from Craig.
Yeah.
And that's just a film series. It's yeah. not a 40, 50, 60 year series. It's a few films that came out a few years ago. So if you're waiting 7 years, all those people that just enjoyed the Craig series, they're like, oh yeah, I remember them. Yeah, yeah, they're all right, those ones.
Yeah. Especially if you change direction.
Yeah. Which they're gonna start again. Yeah.
Well, yeah, so a few things there. So first of all, when the Bond films came back onto Prime for James Bond Day this year, the only films that cracked the top 10 were No Time to Die, Skyfall, Casino Royale.
Yeah, yeah,
so they're
yeah.
the ones that people are interested in.
Yeah.
Once those films pass out of the national consciousness or the international consciousness, then yeah, I think they're in trouble. But I will also say that they said the same thing in the wait for GoldenEye. Is Bond still relevant? And what the thing is that what they need now is a big GoldenEye-sized hit, something to rejuvenate the interest in it. Because if the film comes out and it's a new GoldenEye, then they are onto a winner.
Yeah.
But if it comes out and it's a new Quantum of Solace or, you know, a new Spectre, then but, really...
But you look at GoldenEye came out in 95. So 95, yeah, you had some pretty... a little bit of a slow period over the previous 8-10 years. But before then, it was massive. It was one of the biggest things of all time. You didn't have as many films coming out. You didn't have as many things happening.
Yeah.
So the actual period, that 10 years, I mean, what was... well, it would have been you only... View to a Kill, wouldn't it? Around that time.
85, View to a Kill. Then you had the two Dalton films, 87, 89.
But that period was still where Bond films were the big film at Christmas over that period. So by the time GoldenEye came out, people were still watching the 80s Bond films on Christmas Day.
Yes,
they were massive.
And it was the monoculture. It was not like the spurs.
Yeah. Now you've gone a long time since No Time to Die.
Yeah.
And people don't have that same relationship with it. It's not like No Time to Die is the big Christmas film at the moment. It's gone. It's like, you know, not many people are rewatching
that.
Yeah,
so true.
And remember when it was released, the world was just coming out of lockdowns and COVID was still a thing. So obviously it didn't make as much money as the previous two.
Well, I do think that if they do it right and they market it correctly and everything, it will do fine. But I think there's diminishing returns over the next 30 years where they can't keep building that excitement up because it's less and less all the time. And even like, I've not gone back and watched many of the Craig ones recently because it's not the same. I'd much more like to watch a Moonraker. But all the people that got into Bond during Craig's era, they're not going back to Moonraker.
No.
They're not going all of those ones.
They've not seen Moonraker.
No, why would that be very confused if they did?
The other thing that was going to consider is in the next 10, 15 years is the Bond books will go into public domain. Which means that we're at a risk of there being other versions of, like, it'll be like Sherlock Holmes. It'll be James Bond versus the Martians or James Bond plus Transformers or, you know, anything.
I can't wait to see that. That's going to be great.
Featuring AI George Lazenby.
AI George Lazenby fighting Optimus Prime.
Well, literally, you'll be at some point in the near future, you'll be able to say, that's what I want from a movie, and it'll put it into your virtual reality headset.
So, in answer to the question you didn't ask, I think they need to hurry up. Because otherwise, people aren't gonna be as interested.
But I agree.
Most recent rumour was that Steve McQueen has been linked with being offered the Bond gig. I mean, he's a big British director. They need a big someone who understands the British idiom. He could do it. I didn't see Blitz. I don't know if you did.
No.
Apparently it's very good. I mean, he could do it. I mean, there's lots of great thriller directors who could do Bond.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be that hard. I mean, it can be, but must be. And then the other thing big happening this year in Bond is that Michael G. Wilson and Barbara Broccoli are getting the Irving G. Falberg.
Well, they've got it already, haven't they?
By this time you're listening to this, they will have got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah, which Cubby got. I don't remember, but it was a big thing for him at the time. Yeah. One of his proudest things. Okay. So, yeah, Bond 26, we'll still be talking about until 2029.
Yeah, great.
Well, that just about wraps up our Christmas episode for this year, the podcast. Is it sticking?
No.
No?
No, I hate it.
We'll stick with it then. Podcast. Thank you, everyone, for listening. It's been an absolute pleasure to get back together with both of you. Let's talk about James Bond, even though there's not much to talk about. It feels like actually talked about quite a lot.
We have, yeah. I quite like this annual event. It feels like you get that Christmas copy of Radio Times. Remember that? Big bumper edition.
Mm, Roger Moore on the front.
Yeah.
Or Morecambe Wise.
Yeah. But not a lot about Bond.
I'll tell you what, though. I am looking forward to this Christmas. New Wallace and Gromit.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yes, with Fenton McGraw's
Is
back.
It using the modern techniques of Aardman, or is it?
I don't think Aardman has. No, I mean, it's fully claymation type.
Mm.
So I'm very much looking forward to that. I mean, you probably watched it by this point, but yeah. I hear good things. And it's longer than their older episodes. I think it's sort of. It's more Matter of Loaf and Death length than Wrong Trousers length. And I hear it's very good.
Okay, well,
something to look forward to. And also Daniel Craig in Queer as well, if you're looking for something a bit more risque with your parents this year.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird mix that you're either going from the Aardman one or Queer. That's your two options.
Well, choose your lane.
Choose what you're going for. choose what you're going to watch with your family this Christmas.
So whatever lane you choose, I wish you a Merry Christmas. And surprise, surprise, we're going to be back for a New Year's episode in which we talk more James Bond, and perhaps we'll do a little quiz.
Oh, wow, what a festive treat for everyone.
Yeah, we'll see you next year.
Yes. Could I leave you with a Christmas joke?
No, please don't, but we're not going to be able to stop you.
How does good King Wenceslas like his pizzas? Deep and crisp and even. There we go. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Dreadful.
Merry Christmas.
Ciao.
Hello, I'm Roger Moore, and I'd like to wish you all happy, happy holidays. And if you've got any turkey left over, you can send it to me.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.